Probably not going to be hearing that lawnmower starting up too much anymore here in Wisconsin. Maybe, but I kind of doubt it. It's one of those pieces of equipment that we have to put away for the winter season, and then we've got to turn around and get the other equipment that we use in the winter out and ready to run. And that's what we're going to be talking about today until about 12:30 as we visit with Chris Kaiser. He's the president and CEO of the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute. So we can talk about quite a bit with him. You can talk about getting equipment ready for storage, what you should do to get your winter equipment ready. Maybe you've got a question or an issue with some of your power equipment you want to join in. I hope you will. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chris Kaiser joins us, I believe, by phone. Let's go to Chris. Hi, thank you so much for being with us today, Chris.
Hi, Larry. My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Tell us about the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute first here.
Sure. We're their trade association, so we represent major manufacturers of outdoor power equipment and their suppliers. We're Metro Washington, D.C., sort of the advocacy voice of the business, and we're an SDO. That's a standards development organization. We help the industry create voluntary safety standards. So you're describing mowers and snow throwers and chainsaws. We're the folks that create the safety standards for those products. I just might mention, Wisconsin is our largest, I believe you're our largest state of headquartered manufacturers like Ahrens and Skag and Briggs & Stratton, Kohler, Generac, and Deere has their largest outdoor power equipment manufacturing plant there in Horicon. So we have a huge presence in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you sure do. And the challenges, you probably have faced quite a few challenges in your part of the business. What are some of the industry's biggest challenges?
You know, this morning was dedicated to portable generators in California. Unprecedented challenges in California, as you know, with the wildfires, and a couple million people suddenly without power, hadn't planned for it. And so portable generators are a quick fix, important fix. But California is a complicated state. So with, you know, they have a different emissions criteria and different certification criteria than the other 49 states. And so we have major manufacturers trying to address the need, frankly, and demand for product. And there's a lot of product that's 49 state and not necessarily California. So we're currently working with the government out there to try to get portable generators to everybody, including a lot of the big ones like Kohler and Generac and Briggs & Stratton are Wisconsin-based.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to get generators to the people who need them right now in California, but because of the regulatory challenges, there are some issues. So that was what I was doing this morning. I was surprised to hear you guys got snow already.
Yeah.
I was surprised, too.
Well, just it's pretty much snow over the entire state right now. We had the first snow in southern Wisconsin overnight, and I think we've got another 6 inches coming in southern Wisconsin Thursday. So that may mean snowblowers are coming out. I'm hoping that the temperatures go back up a little bit and a lot of it melts, because normally we don't have the snow this time, this early.
Well, that's music to the ears of Mr. Ahrens and the Ahrens Company Big Snow, because an early snow, one before Thanksgiving, before Halloween, is a huge market driver. That'll send people out to buy their snow throwers.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Margaret in Sauk City has a question for you. Margaret, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, I actually have two. One is I have an old snowblower, and the last time I used it, it had some smoke coming out of it or, you know, whatever. And then my neighbors started doing my snow blowing, but now they've moved. And so I want to know whether it's better to get it repaired or to get a new one.
Well, a lot of that may determine on, you know, what is the cost to repair it. Now, remember, the newest products are going to be the most efficient, the cleanest, the safest. They'll be up to date. The likely recommendation is to get a new one. One of the challenges you have with old product versus new, and it's odd. I heard You know, the timing is fortuitous. You guys were talking about ethanol.
Yeah.
But one of the most important things, obviously, for a piece of engine equipment is the fuel. And now there's a change in the fuel from older products. Since 2007, there's been a government mandate on ethanol. Our industry is not anti-ethanol. Our engineers can design a product to run on anything. The challenge is it has to run on a certification fuel that the government gives us. Well, what's happened is there's now more ethanol because of Congress in fuel for which it's designed. And so what that means, ethanol is an alcohol, and it's hygroscopic, which means it absorbs water. So if it sits for a while, and that's the problem now with gasoline, if it sits, it stales, and it can absorb water in something called phase separation. And that'll oftentimes really inhibit performance, and it can damage or destroy your product. So if you're bringing product in or out of season, right, you're going to store it. So if you've stored it with old fuel, you may have very real trouble with starting, because the older product is designed for a lower level of ethanol. And so, again, here we'd probably recommend, I'd probably recommend you buy a newer unit, which is designed for higher content levels of ethanol.
There you go, Margaret. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, we are putting away that summer equipment, and, you know, the maintenance on this, sometimes I think people, you know, suddenly the snow falls and you forget about the snow or about the lawnmower and there isn't any maintenance done, but it should be done now, I think I hear you saying.
Absolutely, it's critical. Now is absolutely critical. It's not like the old days, again, where you could buy fuel and it could sit in the can for almost an indeterminate amount of time. That fuel, your product should be drained or run dry or stabilized. And what I mean by that is if you're going to put your mower away for the season, now this is especially true for seasonal product, recreational product, emergency use product, run it dry. So you put in just the amount you need for the for what you're doing and run that product dry. And or, here it's become very important to follow your manufacturer's guidance to the letter. Now, they'll speak very specifically in your owner's manual to that, the kind of gasoline to buy, if you should stabilize it or run it dry, follow your manufacturer's directions. But most of them will say run it dry or buy a little stabilizer, it's inexpensive, to add to the fuel that will help with the ethanol. Now, if it's going to stay for a season, they're going to recommend you run it dry. And that's critically important. It's easy to get fresh gas when you want to restart it. The other thing you want to remember about, particularly Wisconsin, where there's a lot of ethanol, a lot of folks that make ethanol, you have fuel in the marketplace, different levels of ethanol. E15 is now an available year-round fuel, but that's only approved for a subset of the auto fleet, or flex fuel automobiles up to 85%. Well, those fuels will damage or destroy your equipment, E10 or less. So OPI has a couple of programs, protect your power, look before you pump. So you're pumping the right fuel. So that's a new one on us, and E15's only been in the marketplace now a few months. So you have to get the right fuel for that product, and we're now recommending buying only the amount of fuel you think you'll use in 30 days. But you want to get that gasoline out of the product before you store it.
Bill in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. I had a question about, been using, snow blowers for a long time, live in Wisconsin. Every few years, or every once in a while, I find I need to clean out some of the fuel injector pieces. It's like a little spray nozzle thing that I need to clean every once in a while. Is there any products that work well on small engines?
Boy, I'm out of my league here a little bit. I'm not an engine engineer. But, yes, they're going to be, and there'll be recommendations on repair and service. Again, I'd ask you to turn to your manufacturers for guidance, certainly with carbureted product. Now, the trend now is moving toward electronic fuel injection and a lot of stuff for a bunch of reasons. But certainly on a carbureted product, this gasoline equation has made it more challenging in the repair and use of the product. So I'm sure there are products available. There's nothing I can speak to directly that I know, but again, I'd follow the manufacturer guidance here.
Thank you, Bill.
A good answer.
Yeah, thank you, Bill, for calling. Stefan in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Stefan.
Hi, Larry. I want to say that I grew up on a farm around the smell of oil and get nostalgic when I think about diesel fumes, though I know it's not healthy. but I really don't have a knowledge of engines despite that. So when I bought my home 9 years ago, I got all electric appliances, and the amount of maintenance I do every winter is exactly zero, which isn't to say I didn't have a Briggs & Stratton chipper one time, but that broke, and I just want to share that, yeah, my level of maintenance is low because I went all electric.
Yeah. There you go. What do you think of that, Chris?
Well, certainly a trend on the consumer side in the current retail marketplace. Again, what we like to say in our industry, there's a product for everyone. There's a power source, a size, a price point for everyone. What we've certainly seen of late because of the lithium ion technology, it's a lot of, oftentimes we follow the auto industry, it's now come down to the outdoor power equipment. So there's a lot of lithium ion technology and the ability to store enough power. Remember, a lot of our product, you need a lot of torque, a lot of power, chainsaws, chippers, grinders. There are some things for which batteries may not be applicable, but certainly on the consumer side of the equation, you certainly see very substantial penetration now at retail dealers, big box, with the handheld side of the equation, so blowers and string trimmers, et cetera, very significant penetration, and walk-behind mowers. This year at Expo, we own the largest trade show in this space, ninth largest show in the country, just was in Louisville, Kentucky, and we saw a lot of larger product, in particular zero-turn mowers, with lithium battery technology. So that technology is finding its way into our space. It's more and more available. Now, the price points are still challenging, but we haven't seen it penetrate yet on the commercial side. So there are pluses and minuses, right? Not every product is perfect for everyone. And so, again, we want to say is whether it's a diesel product or a propane product or a battery product or a gasoline product, depending on your needs, there's an outdoor product for you. Now, we are seeing some consumer... a battery may have an advertised runtime, but if it's cold, if your product's on a slope, if you're in heavy, wet grass, there are things that will affect runtime.
Yeah, there you go. And Chris, we'll take that up. I want to take a quick break for a look at the news, weather, and we'll be back with Chris Kaiser right after that. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your outdoor power equipment right now with Chris Kaiser. He's president and CEO of the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute. So what questions do you have about storing equipment? What would you like to know about getting your winter equipment ready? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And let's take another call. Scott in Fredonia, thank you for calling.
Hi, yes, I have, I guess, kind of a comment question on draining the tanks. If you drain the tank on something with a steel gas tank, it'll rust inside, and you don't want that to happen. If you keep it filled, it won't rust. For my motorcycles, I can turn off the petcock, the gas below the tank, and run it dry and keep gas in the tank. And then I can drain that and put it into the car little bit by little bit at the end of the season or the beginning of the season. With a plastic tank, you can drain it because the tank won't rust. I'm wondering, is there anything that anybody makes that you can run a steel tank dry, spray something in there to fog it to kind of coat the inside of the tank so it doesn't rust? And I've had to replace a gas tank on a snowblower because I ran it dry and it rusted, and then the rust particles get into everything, the jets in the carburetor,
yeah,
et cetera.
Good heavens, that's a new one on me. The fallback for me on that is whatever your manufacturer is recommending. Most have very specific guidance now. I don't know on the older product, guidance from a manufacturer on their recommendations to deal with these fuel challenges. The other thing I've heard is superfill the tank, right? So if you're going to let the tank sit, maybe here in the steel situation, is you stabilize the fuel, you get it as full, literally, as the tank will hold, you press it down to limit the amount of air or, you know, vapor that it can, that it's exposed to. That's the only thing I've heard. Once a tank, I would think, is rusted, I would think it would have to come off.
Yeah. Oh, it'd have to come off.
Yeah.
for sure. Scott, thank you for calling. Marty in Elkhorn, your turn. Hi, Marty.
Hey, good afternoon, Chris and Larry. I just bought a lawn tractor. It's a year or two old, a pull-in. I'm pretty sure it has a plastic gas tank. Unfortunately, it's going to have to reside outdoors all winter long, and I'm looking to get a blade for it so I can plow my driveway. What's the best thing that I can do to make sure that when I go out there and turn the key, it starts up when we've got 4 or 6 inches of snow on the driveway? And I'll listen to your response off air. Thank
all right.
you.
Thanks.
Marty, again, I'm going to be challenging to say is that this kind of equipment is better kept and stored in a dry place. I think it's challenging to keep it in a good, sitting outdoors. That said, stabilizing the fuel, trying to keep it dry if at all possible, and make sure the other mechanical attributes, the key on engines, right? Fuel, oil, the air filter, making sure it's clean, those kinds of things. If it's a battery start, you make sure your battery's going to be charged. I do know manufacturers are pretty stringent about outdoor power equipment is not particularly suited to be stored outdoors uncovered.
Yeah, for sure. Jim in River Falls, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Hey, I was just wondering, chainsaws where you mix the oil and gas, I'm not usually too concerned about it because it seems like the oil kind of stabilizes the gas somewhat and seems like it holds up better. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Hmm. One of the challenges with ethanol in a force, in a mix situation is that alcohol inhibits the ability of the mix to stay mixed. That marriage of gas and oil, those are 4 carbon atoms, they don't mind staying married together. One of the challenges, as you add alcohol to fuel, and particularly mix, that marriage doesn't like to stay together anymore. And so, it can also foul that fuel. What I do, and a lot of folks are now doing and manufacturers recommend, is you buy a premix that's already made, right, at Big Box or your dealer. That's oftentimes it's more expensive, but it's not. It's going to be a mix that stays mixed, right? It's not going to have an issue. That's what I see manufacturers recommending. Steel and Briggs & Stratton and Husqvarna and others now have their own fuel so that to not deal with these kinds of problems.
So you can go – I didn't even know that. You can go buy a can of gas that has the pre-mixed and it won't unmix.
Right, and that's all I use in my handheld. I've got a bunch of trees and some property and whether it's Home Depot or Lowe's or your steel dealer, they sell those fuels on the shelves. So Echo is selling fuel and steel and Briggs and the particular stabilizers. So if you're not using a lot of fuel, nowadays is buy it and burn it. So if you're going to use a mix or you're going to mix fuel yourself, you're going to mix the oil and gas. If you're going to do it, mix it and burn it. Don't let it set.
Lee in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Lee.
Yeah, hi. On the previous caller about rusting inside of a metal gas tank, once it drains it down, a really good product I've been using for years, Marvel's Mystery Oil. Buy a little cheap spray bottle, empty spray bottle, put some in there, squirt it inside the tank, mist it inside the tank. Because you can use that right in your gas, which I do all the time on my small engines. I always add a little bit. It just helps lubricate your cylinder and your piston.
So there. And what was it called again, Lee?
Marvel's Mystery Oil.
Marvel's Mystery Oil. Oh, thanks, Lee. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Lee. I learn something every day.
Yeah. John and Toma will go to you next. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on I used to have a Evinrude, built in 1972, Evinrude 18-horse outboard boat motor, two-cycle, of course, and a mix of fuel and oil. But I would never, it lasted a long time. I had it up until 2000s here, maybe 5 years ago, and it always ran great, but I would never run any gasoline with ethanol in it. I always spend a little more and buy the premium or the recreational gas, they call it, like a Quick Trip or something like that, mix it with that. But they always ran better with that stuff.
Yeah.
Th- That's really good advice. My family lives on an island in Florida, so in a marine environment in particular, remember, that ethanol absorbs water. So if it's a hot, humid environment, you're in a marine environment, you are really adversely affected. And so certainly with, depending on the area of the country, or if you live in a marine environment, it's critically important to keep an eye on ethanol content. And because a lot of times the marinas won't sell, it'll be Indylene, E0, which is what a lot of the product was designed for. And so if you had particularly older product that had been burning low-content ethanol for a long time, suddenly trying to transition that product to a newer fuel can be very challenging for the product.
A very good point, John. Thank you so much. Somebody else is wondering about what happened. What's the first thing to do when it comes to, I'm reading, when it comes to winterizing your power equipment? I don't know if they've tuned in a little late, but maybe talk about that.
The key, if you have engine product, obviously is the fuel, and it's filtering. And so you want to store it in a clean, dry place, keeping moisture from it if at all possible. A lot of components can rust or be adversely affected. So dry storage. Fuel, follow your manufacturer's directions to the letter. Most of them are likely going to say run it dry, so get the fuel out of it so that when you reintroduce it next spring, you add fuel, you're ready to go. The other thing is clean it, right? You don't want a lot of debris on the product. So if you've been mowing or you're in wet grass and you've got a lot of that, clean the product off. You know, use the port, use your hose so the underdeck is clean. You don't want to trap or hold moisture or dirt up against the product. Clean that air filter, change that air filter. That's super easy to do, and it will really help the product. Most of us who use outdoor power equipment know that if you take care of it, if you take care of the engine and make sure it has oil and it has a clean filter, this stuff is almost indestructible. They're tough pieces of equipment, but you have to maintenance them.
Somebody else, you mentioned owner's manual, and somebody else wondered, well, what the heck do you do if you can't find your owner's manual?
Well, luckily nowadays, all that stuff can be found online. So if you've got a Briggs & Stratton product, go to their website, you know, punch it in. You can usually find guidance on almost any product. It goes back pretty far. If you just, you know, Google it or use the Internet or go to that manufacturer's website, they'll usually give you some guidance on older product.
Mark in Rochester has a question for you. Rochester, Minnesota, I believe. Hi, Mark.
Hello, it's actually Rochester, Michigan.
Oh, Rochester, Michigan. Okay.
And my comment is for the people who want to store their equipment outside, never use one of those ubiquitous blue poly tarps or any waterproof tarp to tie that over the equipment. It will capture the moisture.
Yep.
The metal will brush, and it'll do bad things to your electrical system as well. You're better off putting it under a covered roof to keep the rain and snow off.
And it sounds to me like you're agreeing with that, Chris.
I am. Having done it poorly myself, certainly with boats as well, you don't want to trap moisture, which is exactly what what this gentleman just described, is exactly what happens. It traps moisture under the product. Again, is to get it out of the rain and snow and sun. So get it covered, but very sound advice from your listener.
And thanks again, Mark, for calling. Appreciate it. What about, you know, I heard in the past and been told, you know, it's not a good idea to run your motor out of gas, just run it out, because you can damage the engine. Is there any truth to that?
Well, the guidance we're getting now from most engine manufacturers is to run them dry. It may not be what they want for the product, but it's commonplace. Most fuel today has at least 10% ethanol, unless, as the Marine guy was saying, you find an E0, is that the gasoline now is pretty challenging. It just is no longer stable for months at a time, and you're better off getting it out. Or using an Indylene E0 and or stabilizing it. Again, I think it's going to vary by your engine manufacturer. There'll be very specific guidance. So it sounds trite, but get that owner's manual and follow it to the letter. Now, they may all look, you know, equipment looks the same or may look the same. They're very, very different. And the manufacturers are different. We've got a lot of engine manufacturers, several in Wisconsin. Follow their guidance.
Nick works on small engines. He sent an email. He called to recommend Seafoam as an additive and ethanol-free gas from Quick Trip. He also suggested a battery tender for anyone keeping equipment outside. You agree with that, Chris?
I would. A sound advice. Obviously, again, I defer because I have a lot of battery manufacturers. A lot of my guys make battery product. And there's a lot of specific guidance relative to battery, and in particular stuff that's stored outdoors. And they'll give you guidance there. Lots of issues, not issues, but things to bear in mind on batteries, whether it's recovery, recycling. And now we're starting to see challenges there with counterfeiting. So we want to be very, very careful about the batteries. My guess is if it's the kind that's removable, you're going to want to take them out and take them indoors along with the charging stations or ports is to keep them out of the wet.
So they're counterfeiting batteries?
Oh, sure. Anything with significant value of that, a lot of offshore stuff. Our industry is, whether it's chainsaws, some of the more significant price point items, there's a lot of counterfeiting going on. Coming into the country, we work hard to, with regulators and enforcement folks to prevent that. But on the battery side, you know, battery product, particularly the bigger rechargeable units that come in pairs and that sort of thing, it can be expensive. It's one of the most valuable pieces of a battery product. And we are seeing some counterfeit penetration, mostly up from offshore, but it will become a problem.
The batteries have improved in the last decade or so, have they not?
Oh, my goodness, dramatically. The ability now to store significant amounts of power is really, and charging times and speed charging. So all of that has really, really improved. And you're starting to see a lot of manufacturers now with that offer a wide range of product, you know, your leaf blower, your hedge trimmer, your string trimmer, your walk-behind mower, et cetera, all running off the same battery system. So they're flip-in and out units. So the same battery can power everything. It's a significant trend in the business. So
that's kind of a cool thing.
Very cool.
As you look down, future technology for this, do you, any ideas on that?
You know, who knows if it's going to be lithium? It could be solid state. There are any number of opportunities here. And so lithium is taking hold in our business now. So you're seeing a lot of significant price point improvements, lots of that entering the marketplace. Where we haven't seen it yet, but you're starting to see it, is in the commercial space. Now, once that takes off, but we anticipate, again, follow the auto industry. So whether it's lithium or hybrids or hydrogen, these are likely, you'll likely see these in our industry as well. We're starting to see a lot of, certainly on the commercial side, hybrids, where you'll have a small gasoline or diesel engine that powers a generator, and the generator powers the unit and its functionality. So we're seeing a lot of hybrids, and we're seeing a lot of propane. Propane has made a significant, you can get pricing on propane for 3 years, so on the commercial operator, it's far more stable from price point than gasoline for the big user. So propane's made a significant dent. Just look for different technologies. They're coming.
Somebody, let's talk about that snowblower and getting that ready for the season. I heard somebody talking about they like to spray PAM, that's that food spray, on the inside of the blower so it doesn't get all stuffed up with snow. Did you ever hear of that?
Sure. You hear a lot of anecdotal stuff and a lot of colloquial recommendations. I'm going to stick to the script and follow my members' guidance to the letter. And so whether it's PAM, I don't know if they're going to say that, or use your tool, you should follow. Obviously, a snow thrower is a powerful, significant piece of equipment. It's got an engine. It's got swirling blades. It's got an auger. It's got a thrower. This is a significant piece of equipment. You need to be very, very familiar with it, know how to run it, follow your owner's manual to the whatever guidance they give you on discharging a blocked chute, follow it. The PAM I can't comment on.
Okay. Well, you mentioned earlier generators, and certainly there's going to be plenty of generator use in California. with these fires. But here in Wisconsin, we got winter and maybe a power outage, which can certainly be dangerous here. What about making sure your generator is ready when you need it?
That's key. And Larry, thanks for mentioning it. The key to a generator is preparation. Getting it ready before you need it. Obviously, my family's from, we're in Florida. We know a hurricane's coming. You can do it. But oftentimes, snow, ice, tornadoes, you don't know. And so outdoor power equipment, in particular portable generators, are something that you're going to want to keep track of. When is the last time I ran it? How old is the fuel? Do I have fuel? Do I have adequate fuel if I need it? All that kind of planning is paramount. A lot of folks on a portable generator become familiar with the product. Run it before you need it. Think it through. In Florida, oftentimes, if we are out of power for extended lengths of time, people steal these things. And so they'll pull them up close to the house or in the breezeway. This is not what you do. You don't run it indoors. You don't run it in the garage. You don't run it in the breezeway. You don't run it near an open window or door. You have to use these things safely. There's very specific guidance on running them. This is an engine. It's burning fuel. It's producing carbon monoxide, but it's also producing electricity. It can save your life. Critically important. But you have to follow the guidance. What also happens, if you're not prepared, you may not have the right extension cords. Is it an all-weather cord? Is it rated and tested for the amount of load you want? How much load are you going to put on the unit? You can get a 100-watt unit or a 12,000-watt unit. Figure out what you need, what are the kinds of extension cords you need, so that you can operate it safely, safe distance from the house or wherever you're going to use it. Is it stored in a proper way? We've certainly had people that have stored their product appropriately in a shed or garage that has an electric door that they can't get open when the power goes out. So you've got to be able to get to it, be familiar with it. Portable generators are fantastic. I have one. I use it. They're just wonderful to have, but you don't want to try to start it or use it when you need it. If it's dark or raining or ice, or make sure you have what you need in advance. You know how to use it, start it, where your fuel is, et cetera, how it's been stored, and test it, pre-run it.
I'm just purchasing one. I mean, what should you really look for?
Figure out what you need. What do you want to run, right? So back of envelope, 800-watt bulbs is 800 watts. You got to figure out, what do you want to run? Are you just going to keep your refrigerator running? Are you trying to run a heating HVAC system? Well, a furnace is a big pull. The thing you want to remember when you're starting a motor, oftentimes there's a surge, right? You're going to need 2 to 3 times the power, its watt rating, in power. And so you don't want to put too big a drain on it. So figure out what you're trying to run. Then make sure you have the right extension cords. Again, are they weather-related? Generator sizing guidelines, all that can be easily found, either on the unit when you're trying to buy it, the owner's manual, you can see it online. But you'll have that choice. And obviously there's a price point for that. So a very small unit that's just going to run the radio and a TV, that's going to be one price. But a 12,000-watt diesel portable generator is going to run a lot of stuff. But you got to have the right fuel, and you've got to have the right cords. Don't backfeed the house, people. Don't plug back into the house to try to backfeed it. You're avoiding your circuit breaker, and you could damage or hurt yourself. Just don't do that.
On that note, we're going to close, Chris. Thank you so much. And
my
folks
pleasure.
Can go online to the Outdoor Power Equipment Institute, and there's a lot more information there. Chris Kaiser, our guest today. Fun talking with him about all that outdoor power equipment and getting it ready for winter and putting away the summer stuff. Great to have him with us. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about cooking wild game and fish, and then Darren Bush talks about canoeing and kayaking. So that'll be fun as well. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.